McDouble and the double cheeseburger are not impacted.
14 days until the election, former President Trump in North Carolina talks about vehicles.
Like the idea of the deduction for a car, interest deduction for a car. But then I said, but to get it, you have to build the car in the United States.
Prosecutors allege former Abercrombie and Fitch CEO Michael Jeffries and two others led an international male prostitution operation for 7 years. New York U.S. Attorney Breon Peace.
They caused the men to believe that attending these sex events could yield modeling opportunities with Abercrombie or otherwise benefit their careers.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Former President Barack Obama was in Wisconsin Tuesday. He was at a rally at Madison's Alliant Energy Center with Governor Tim Walz. The goal was to rally voters on the first day of early voting.
It is not just policies that are on the ballot. It is who we are and what we stand for.
There were so many people who attended that rally at the Alliant Energy Center that there were major traffic backups, even causing some school buses to be delayed. We have new data on gun violence here in Wisconsin. Here's Terry Bell.
A new study finds 830 people in Wisconsin were killed by guns in 2022. That includes homicides and suicides. That's more people than died in car crashes. The numbers come from the Wisconsin Anti-Violence Effort Education Fund. More than three-fourths of people shot to death in Wisconsin were Black.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. This is Civic Media News.
To everyone who is a cheese lover like us, Culver's is the place for you.
I'm Culver's team member Sephora, and I get to celebrate my love of cheese with our guests every day. Whether it's our world-class cheddar, Swiss, or American melted on a butter burger, or the gooey golden goodness of our cheese curds, at Culver's, we treat you to the best real Wisconsin cheese. Order ahead on the app or culvers.com for a taste of what we do best.
From Wisconsin with love, welcome to Delicious.
Culver's on 8th Street South in Wisconsin Rapids.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Oh boy, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. As I got the lecture. Donald Trump is the president for the working class. Got the lecture. He's going to eliminate Social Security taxes. We're not going to pay taxes on Social Security or into Social Security. We're going to end all taxes on tips, all taxes on overtime, and there are going to be tariffs on everything. It's going to be great. And we're going to get rid of all those, you know, those people. We're going to get rid of them all. And as this person is going through the talking points, because he got them from the RNC and from Donald Trump and from right-wing blather, he's got them. He's got them down. We're not going to have to pay taxes anymore. We're getting our pony. We're finally getting our ponies. No stable to put it in. No place for it to run around. No shovel to pick up the you-know-what. But we're getting ponies. Evidently, that's the... And they have unicorns. They have the horns as well. And the thing is, this person was very confident in how great this was going to be. Until I said, well, you know, have you thought about what happens when you blow a giant hole in the revenue coming in that Social Security recipients pay? Because again, our tax system is somewhat progressive. So if you're not taxing people at the top end, And they're, because again, there's somewhat, there's a little bit of progressivity in it. You know, people at the top end are going to do really, really well. People at the bottom, not at all, because it doesn't benefit them. Maybe you, not at all. So the idea that we're going to somehow, you know, not pay social, get pay taxes is kind of ludicrous and playing into the right wing, you know, wealth classes playbook. The idea that we're going to end taxes on tips and overtime is just fantasy. If you really wanted to do something with wage earners, you know, change our tax code to ensure that people who work for a living pay a lower tax rate than people who, I don't know, gamble on Wall Street, for instance. And also can't do these things without an act of Congress. So, the tariffs things we could talk about. There are things that I like about tariffs. They do raise prices on things because that's they raise the costs. You don't get to exploit cheap labor in slave labor countries like China and reap a small amount of benefit that we do. Now, understand, corporate America, wild profits, line in the pockets at the expense of the workers in China and the consumers here in the U.S. So I'm on strategic things, I'm in favor of tariffs, not broad-based, because what we know is going to raise inflation. And I do think Kamala Harris is right, calling it a Trump tax. It is. And then, you know, he regaled me of this remigration of all of these people who are non-citizens who are working and paying Social Security tax, but not collecting Social Security. Somehow throwing them all out is going to help as well. And what we know is all of that is bad. All of it is going to be harmful for Social Security going forward, for our pension system. I don't know if you've known it, but our pension system is a little bit of trouble because employers, they've run off with the money. And we've had laws in place for far too long that have kind of allowed them to underfund things. And oh, by the way, we've been heavily dependent on Wall Street, who figures out a way every time to screw us over. So are we surprised? But you look at Trump and he's got this great idea for Social Security, which is all about eliminating taxing it, all eliminating tips and overtime and all that stuff. And you go, well, who's going to pay into the system? Because right now, if we do nothing, you're looking at in what, 2031, 2032, potentially a 23% cut to Social Security. You're looking at a sizable chunk taken out. Now you move to the Trump plan. And this is one of those things where you go, do we really want to go this way? If you go to the Trump plan, you see a 10-year projection of a couple, like almost $3 trillion being, you know, out of the system, and a change in the benefits in 2035, a negative 61%. You're looking at a massive, massive cut. Almost 61%, because you're accelerating the cash shortfall. So the 10-year, you know, it's $2.3 trillion until 2035. Where does that go? You know, it increases the odds and how quickly the system becomes insolvent. So by 2034, we could lose 23%. 2034, by 2031, you're looking at 61%. And you go, how is that possible? Well, this is what they've always wanted. This is the wet dream list. You know, ending Social Security will hurt in irreparable ways. And they know this. Ending taxes on overtime and tips hurts Social Security. And they know this. They know all of this stuff will finally get them to the place where they've always wanted to be. And that's destroying your Social Security system and privatizing what's left. The question is, as our financial system is imploding on working people, because the rich people are going, we want more. We want it all, please. And we're going to get it because we've bought a political system that is badly broken. They have gummed up this system badly. We should have scrapped the cap a decade ago. We wouldn't be in this mess. You ask any citizen on the street, do you think everyone should pay tax on Social Security all the way up, no matter what? Absolutely. Except the libertarian idiots who go, we shouldn't have any Social Security. And maybe they're going to get their way. Maybe the sad reality is this is what finally, this is what kills the system. The dangling of greed carrots in front of us. Hey, you won't have to pay wages on your tips. You won't have to pay wages on overtime. You won't have to pay wages on your Social Security. You won't have to pay taxes on anything because we're all getting ponies, man. And this kind of utopian thinking gets us into one thing, and that's trouble. And they know it, and they're planning for it. The question is, how do we fight back? Well, when we come back, we're going to talk to a guy who fought back, and the multi-employer system that got saved because of it. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with Kenneth Sreebringer after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of the interviews I wanted when I was in Chicago at the DNC and did not get. It was one of those things where I go, you know, hey, I got to get some of my brother Teamsters on the program to talk about, you know, one, why the International didn't endorse, but two, saving the pensions, the fact that Kamala Harris was the defining vote, the deciding vote, the decider woman in ensuring that multi-employer pension funds in this country have a backstop, that people who have worked their entire lives to get to a point where they can lead out those golden years with a little dignity, a little respect, and, you know, maybe a little money in their pocket to do some good things, to do some things that they've worked their whole lives to be able to do, like my grandparents were able to do. They spent their entire lives working. They had Social Security, they had their savings, but they also had that defined benefit pension that every month was in the mailbox, gave them the ability to lead out their lives with dignity. They died in their own homes. And I got to tell you, that's kind of where we should be moving towards as a country, and not in poverty. And here to share some thoughts on how we maintain that and talk about, you know, the fact that his organization did endorse Kamala Harris in this election. That's why I've asked Kenneth Sreebringer to come talk with us. Kenneth is the president of the National United Committee to Protect Pensions. You can check out their website, NUCPP.org. Kenneth, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It was a pleasure.
Got to tell you, a little miffed. Couldn't get you on the show during the convention because you were just mobbed with people who wanted to talk to you. And for reason, the reason being that you guys did something that over the last 12 years, a decade prior, they weren't able to do, and that's to make sure that working people had the backstop to ensure in their golden years their retirement was secure.
Correct. Absolutely. I have to still pinch myself once in a while to make sure this really did happen, that we were actually able to help save the multi-employer and single-employer pension funds with our effort. I got involved in 2015, and it's coming up on 10 years. It took 7 to 8 years of lobbying before we could finally get a solution.
Yeah. No, look, I remember Bob Casey. I remember hearing back in 2012, you know, doing an event with Bob Casey, who was one of the champions of this early on,
Absolutely.
To ensure that the multi-employer funds were getting the help that they needed, because you know the writing was on the wall. Union density has been under assault by Republicans and corporate America for decades. Union density has fallen. The number of people in these plans have fallen. And oh, by the way, corporate America did the bait and switch and said, "Oh no, we're going to make you all millionaires with these defined contribution plans," which have not worked out well at all for anyone. So this has been a long way coming, hasn't it, Ben?
It's been a long time, a long ways. And again, sometimes I have to sit down and rattle my head and say, man, over 10 years of my involvement, but I had heard about it previously about leading up to, especially when Senator Casey and Pomeroy, I remember the Pomeroy-Casey Act was one of the first ones about dealing with the problems with the multi-employer pension funds. And single employer.
Yeah. No, and again, it's a shame it took that long to get to. And the only reason that it happened is because the vice president cast the deciding vote, without a single Republican vote, mind you.
Absolutely. I have so much respect for her. I have so many stories that I have met politicians along the way in my lobbying effort in D.C., but I remember the first time I ran into, at that time, Senator Kamala Harris in a hallway, and I can share this quick story. Bernie Anderson and I, we used to travel together and do all our lobbying together, knocking on doors. I get off the elevator, I got my head down, and I'm walking towards the exit in the Hart building. The Hart building is one of the Senate buildings. Who comes around the corner at 100 miles an hour, and we almost clash. Can you see this?
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
When I look up, we were nose to nose. And I says, oh, my God, it's you. Because my brother and sister-in-law live in California. And they were always talked about Kamala Harris. The first thing she said to me, Rick, she looked down at my jacket and she says, Teamsters, I love my Teamsters. So I said to her, good. Because I want to be known as your favorite Teamster from now on. And I bring this story up because she didn't know me from a hole in the ground. And her first comment was, Teamsters,
yeah.
I love my Teamsters. And she helped prove her love for us by help securing our benefits. Thank you for giving me that moment to say that shout out to her.
No. Look, I understand you personally, endorse her. Obviously, your organization has endorsed her, even if my international union, the Teamsters, chose not to endorse anyone. And for what reason, I can't fathom. But, the fact that the pension was secured under the Biden-Harris administration should have been enough, in my view, for that endorsement.
Well, I think we all know that. We don't know, and I'm going to tell you, we try not to try to figure out the international and why they do things, because we're a separate organization. We put the faces to this crisis, and that truly was the difference. You were talking about they've been fighting this for over a decade, but we have been told it took the faces. It took retirees. It took my story, and again, I don't want to always make this about me, but my wife was at home, passed away from cancer. And I had to, in order to commit to this organization, I had to promise her I would never quit. She knew her faith. She says, you must stay in the fight.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it's what I've been saying for years. It's the stories that people connect with. And, right. I heard you guys on stage at the DNC. I've talked to people like you who have been fighting this fight day in, day out for the decade it took. And the stories are heartbreaking. People whose loved ones are sick, people who themselves are sick, worried about is their spouse going to be able to get something when they retire, because they worked their entire lives for this. They were made a promise. If you take less wages, if you work more, you're going to get this benefit at the end. And then, to kind of just rip it away because, sorry, oops. I got to tell you, is flat out wrong.
It's wrong. It's wrong, Rick. And some of the stories we have heard where grown men are crying. Some even committed suicide. We had some people that committed suicide in different organizations, all because they didn't know if they were going to be able to make it, man.
No, look, I know people, Kenneth, who, they were worried. They were sweating it out. This idea that they're going to lose 30, 40, 50% of the pension that they had, you know, thought that their life was going to give them, and that they would be able to make it on that, and to say, oh, well, I'm sorry, we're just going to pull that away. Un-American.
Un-American. My benefit reduction was 55%, Rick.
Wow.
55%. Just I'm taking it from you. You can't say nothing. I'm taking it, and that's all there's to it. It's like, what do you mean you're just taking it?
So what would your life have been had they taken that amount away?
You know, man, like everybody that heard that bad news, you start thinking about how do I save? Do I cut back? Do I sell my car? Again, at the time, we had medical expenses from my wife being back and forth at the cancer center. So all that, I don't know. I'm stuttering because I still think about, it wouldn't have put me in poverty. It would have just, life would have been a lot tougher.
And you're one of the fortunate ones, Kenneth. You know, I've talked to a number of people who said it would send me back to the truck. I'd have to, at 75 years old, I'm going to have to go back to work if they'll take me. And you know, to hear that after someone has spent their entire lives doing the right thing, doing what they were supposed to do, playing by the rules that we were all told if you followed, if you worked hard and played by the rules, you were going to get ahead. And at the end, to get kicked in the teeth, in the richest country in the history of humanity, at its richest moment, that should be acceptable to no one.
No one. And, you know, we talk about saving the pension funds, but I think part of the message that really is never out there and clear, what they really did was the politicians saved their own butt, because who was really going to be suffering was the Pension Guarantee Corporation, the PBGC. They were the ones that were saved, because if the pension funds would have went down, that was going to collapse the whole system. The PBGC could not have took on another 400,000 retirees.
So what should we really be talking about? Because clearly your work is not done. You've got the multi-employer funds backed up. Clearly the work evidently isn't done. How do we fix a system? Because I hear this all the time. You know, companies put their pensions on the back of the PBGC, who says, sorry, we can only pay you pennies on the dollar.
Right, exactly.
How do we make sure that those are backstopped to where the worker doesn't continually get screwed over and over and over? Because here's the sad reality. In the situation, you guys did well, and good on you for fighting it. But I know people who weren't so lucky. I know people who did get whacked by a sizable percentage. Well, and we didn't do enough to help them. How do we, in the future, make sure that doesn't happen?
I think what we're doing now, as we lobby, let's work for some changes. Let's just don't throw the money at it and say, oh, it's all solved, because it comes back to haunt us later on down the road. Let's work on some real solutions that will impact and have a better impact on us, and not this, we're going to cut you and reduce your benefits. Could you imagine? And you'd hear these horror stories about people having to go and stand in food lines. And this shouldn't be that way after we've worked all our years. And the pensions were decent pensions to live on. Yeah. And I like what you said earlier. I did a presentation one day on what you early called a three-legged stool. You've got your defined benefit, you've got your Social Security, and you've got some savings. That's how that three-legged stool stands up. If you cut one of the legs off a stool, what happens? It falls over.
Yep. And the problem is, Kenneth, as we've seen over my entire working life, my grandparents' generation, they had that solid three-legged stool. But right. Over time, we destroyed the defined benefit pension fund, ripped that leg right off. And, you know, wages have been stagnant and declining, sadly, for the last 50 years. So we've whittled that leg down to a nub. And now what they're trying to do is they're trying to destroy Social Security. So, you know, we may just be sitting on a stick.
We're sitting on a stick. And when I say we as an organization, that is our new fight. Our new fight is helping bring attention to the Social Security issue. We've got to make some real changes and not impacting people by cutting their benefits. That's not the solution.
So you guys are going to stay in, you're staying in business, going to get out there and do what Teamsters and what union members do, and that's right. Demand better. Is that what I'm hearing?
What you're hearing, you've heard it. We are not giving it. We're not done. Do we need a break? Yes, but the work is not done.
Because I gotta tell you, I can't imagine the elation of having won this. The moment you heard that Harris decided, cast the deciding vote, and that this was gonna actually happen, that your pensions weren't gonna get ripped off, that you were gonna be able to get what you had earned. Walk me through the feeling process of that.
Well, I was elated, I was really happy because not only, I'm trying to gather my words without getting emotional.
That's it's emotional.
I was dealing with some issues that only a few people were dealing with. And the thought of losing 55% of my benefit and my wife was such a life-changing thought, which I still ended up losing her. But I just knew that if I lost my benefit and lost her, I wouldn't have been impoverished, but I know emotionally I would have been depressed, sick. But, Rick, I hold my head up. We made it. We got to fight some more. We live to fight another day, and I'm here to fight another day. And that day is we partnered up with the ARA, Congressman Larson out of Connecticut, Senator Bernie Sanders. We're working on Social Security issues. We're in it for the fight.
Nice.
Because they've asked us to be a part because they know what bringing the faces to this impact really makes a difference.
So let's talk about that.
I want to be here to help people like you going forward, the next generation. Like I said, I could quit today.
Yeah, you're whole.
I'm done.
You're good.
I'm done. The Lord sent me there for a reason, and my work is not done. Our work is not done. So,
and thank you for that. Thank you for looking out for the next generation. I wish we did more of it. But this comes back down to November. This comes down to who we put into that Oval Office and who we put into Congress, who's sitting in those Senate seats, who's arguing in the House, who's who's making the policy coming forward, and that's why November is so important.
And that you're right, and that's why. For a person like me, I'm thinking, why would Bob Casey be having a fight? Why should Sherrod Brown be having a fight to retain his seat? Why should my Senator Tammy Baldwin be fighting to retain her seat after all the things they have done for us? Us as not only Teamsters, but people, Americans, they fight for things that are right for us. Why wouldn't you be voting them back in? Why would they have to always be on the edge of maybe being voted out?
The moneyed interest doth have a wide club to spread their propaganda. And I look at someone like Donald Trump, who has never done an honest day's work in his life. I'm sure you saw over the weekend he was working at a McDonald's for a day that was nothing more than a political stunt. And look, politicians do this, but his was even more disingenuous.
Right.
And it's any thoughts on a Trump at the McDonald's?
I don't know if I trust him with making my food.
That's such a nice way to put no. So you guys have endorsed Harris. Clearly, this was the issue, right?
Right. Well, what had happened was, and I've gotten so many opportunities. I keep repeating myself. I got an opportunity to introduce the president. And on December 8th, 2022, when he made the announcement that Central States was going to be receiving their money from the SFA funds. And when you look into the room and I knew making that announcement, and I said, this is the president that saved our benefit. It came from the heart, man. Do you know what it's like to be able to say my benefit is saved? I had another thing I was going to have to do at the DNC. I got all these little stories. And when I was doing my little training, my little speech, going over, practicing, I says, can I do this? And I pulled out my wallet. And I says, can I say what that commercial, what's in your wallet? 55% more of my benefit is in my wallet because of the Biden-Harris administration. Vote your wallet, Teamsters.
Yeah, no, that is it. What's in that wallet is what you were promised, what you earned. That's the commercial.
That's the commercial. Not a McDonald's cheeseburger.
not a McDonald's cheeseburger. But Kenneth, I appreciate the time you've spent with me. Good on you. Good on the folks at the National United Committee to Protect Pensions. You got a lot more work to do. Celebrate the moment. And anything I can do to help, I'm here for you.
I'm going to keep you contacted. And the same goes to you. You got our contact information.
Outstanding. Thank you so much.
Let's help each other, help the people. All right.
Good stuff. Kevin Stribling, president of the National United Committee to Protect Pensions, NUCPP.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Want to hear your thoughts. Is this the issue that should have gotten Harris the endorsement? I think it's number one. Also, the Elon Musk, we're going to fire striking workers with Trump speech. That should have been as well. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe a shower or two, otherwise mostly cloudy tonight, low 40s. Sunshine and much cooler tomorrow, high in the mid 50s. More showers possible Thursday, high low 60s. Sunshine returns back for Friday and Saturday, highs in the upper 50s. It's 60 right now.
Bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure, down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. It's Wisconsin and Penn State at Camp Randall Stadium. Our coverage begins at 4:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've been hearing a lot about unions out there doing the GOTV work, getting their members out to vote this November, doing the education process. And this is where, again, I come back to my union, the Teamsters Union. I think a failure to endorse, a major missed opportunity to get out and educate their members on why this election is so important and why one candidate is really bad for them. And I look at the folks over at Unite Here who have been out knocking on those doors. And according to their most recent press release, up over 2.5 million doors they've knocked on in 10 battleground states. They want to hit 3.5 million. They've got 1,400 union members out there canvassing, knocking on doors in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, Ohio, North Carolina, and more. And here to share some thoughts on their efforts to get out the vote and educate, inoculate, and, well, get the best candidate in office for working people. I've asked Dee Taylor to come talk with us. Dee, a longtime head over at the Culinary Workers Union. You know we've got folks from there on the program here. And also the head of the parent company, Unite Here. Over the summer, you know he stepped down now in a more activist role. Dee, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So you're out on the, clearly out on the streets, you know, knocking on doors and, talking to people. What are you working on?
Well, today I'm working on some just union stuff. But this morning we had our big launch of our canvassers here in Las Vegas. We had Senator Rosen there. We had Jimmy Kimmel, who is from Las Vegas, who was here in 18. He's here this time about backing, obviously, Rosen and Harrison Waltz. I mean, we have an opportunity to have a card-carrying union member as the vice president, which is extremely exciting. And we have an opportunity to elect, Kamala Harris, who brings her union pedigree with her. I mean, she was involved with the organizing project with her and Marty Walsh about what we need to expand organizing and grow the power of the union versus what Project 2025, Elon Musk, and Donald Trump stand for.
Yeah, no, and I look at this, and, you know, as I said from the beginning, as a card-carrying Teamster, I'm a little disappointed in my leadership for not endorsing, because it seems like such a no-brainer. In the last segment, we talked to a Teamster whose pension was saved because of Kamala Harris's deciding vote and Joe Biden pushing the pension issue into the forefront. And then we've heard Donald Trump and Elon Musk waxing poetic about firing striking workers. So it, one, seems like a missed opportunity to me, but one that the rest of the movement has not missed.
Well, listen, I can't comment on the internal maturations inside the Teamsters. I just know in our union, we want workers to progress in the rights that they have in organizing and to grow the union, but also bring working class people their standard up. Donald Trump is for billionaires. His last big tax cut was for billionaires and millionaires. We need a tax cut that affects our folks. We need a child tax credit to help folks. We need affordable health care, and we need to raise the minimum wage, all that stuff. None of that stuff Trump is standing for. So at least in our union, it was a no-brainer. At the same time, listen, there's no question. Prices have gone up, housing, groceries. We've got to talk to our members about those companies that are gouging and who's going to fight for them. Somebody who gives tax breaks and sides with corporations, or Harris Waltz team. And once we get talking to them, they get it. But we're all affected by the high cost of living that's hit working class people the hardest.
Yeah, but there's no switch in the Oval Office that turns that inflation on. I would argue a good majority of what we're experiencing is good old-fashioned red-blooded American corporate greed.
No question. I agree with you 100%. So who's going to fight that? Somebody who sides with corporation and, frankly, is a real estate person. They are all for jacking up the prices and size of corporation versus Harris and Waltz and the Democrats. I don't think there's any question, but we have to talk to people. We have a lot of folks, they're not going to vote for Trump. They're like, well, I'm just not going to vote. And we tell them, well, then that's a vote for Trump. If you don't vote, that's a vote for Trump. So we're out there pounding those doors, like in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, in Nevada, obviously in Ohio for Sherrod Brown, in North Carolina, because we want to keep the direction going and not go back.
Now, Trump came out while he was in Las Vegas, actually, with an idea that many are saying was pointed directly at the Culinary Union, and that is not taxing tips or you know, the wages on tips. What do you make of that pledge to not tax tipped wages?
Well, Harris has made the exact same pledge, but she did something that Trump would never do. Right now in 43 states, there's a sub-minimum wage. 18 states in America can pay $2.13 an hour for tipped workers. She wants to get rid of that and raise people up to the federal minimum wage with no tip deduction. So for example, if you're making $2.13 right now, which is in 18 states, for example, you would automatically, just to get the current minimum wage, would get a $5 an hour increase. Trump would never say that. But both candidates have said no taxes on tips, which I think is great. But we have to get rid of the sub-minimum wage for tip workers, too.
Let me ask you.
Only Harris is talking about. Certainly Trump is not.
The position I took when I first heard it, and you're clearly the expert on this, but, you know, when Mitt Romney in 2012 said 47% of the people in the country don't pay federal taxes, aren't some of those 47% of people who don't pay federal taxes tipped workers because they don't make enough to pay federal taxes?
That's exactly right. If you make $2.13 an hour, think about that, $2.13 an hour, and you work 8 hours, you make $17 for the whole shift. And let's say tips aren't great that day. No, of course they don't pay tax. We're trying to uplift people both on the back end and the front end. And that's what Harris and Waltz are standing for. Trump is certainly not going to say that. And frankly, Trump throws out stuff without a plan to achieve it. He just throws it out. So we think no taxes on tips is great, but we also think we got to get rid of the sub-minimum wage and lift everybody up and increase the minimum wage.
Yeah, but again, it seems like right now in desperation, Trump is throwing a lot of things out, especially on the tax front. No tax on Social Security, no tax on overtime. Man, he's just the baby, the bathwater, all this stuff. And I think you hit it a second ago. There's no plan to actually do these things. It's just rhetoric. It's just word salad.
Well, I mean, listen, we used to call Trump number 33 in Atlantic City. We own casinos because he's been in bankruptcy three different times. Chapter 11. What he is laying out right now is the bankruptcy of our budget. You know, Republicans always talk fiscal conservative, balanced budget. They haven't said beep about what Trump has said. And his plan would literally add trillions to the deficit. And you know he's not going to raise taxes on rich people at all or corporations. So he's talking about bankrupting the country, too. So I never want to hear a Republican talk again about fiscal responsibility. With what Trump has proposed is just the opposite of that, and their silence is deafening.
Yeah, I got to tell you, though, you know, in all the years I've been doing this show and been involved in knocking on doors and doing the kind of work you're out there doing, I never thought I would get to be in this moment where you have working people who are still, you know, kind of on a fence about a billionaire who tells them he wants to pass right to work. He praises striking workers being fired, you know, against the minimum wage. You know, you go down the list of the things that his administration did. It's amazing to me that with all of it in its totality, how bad it was, that we have this kind of either amnesia or willingness to just forget because of the cult of personality. But I never thought we'd be here.
I don't think it's, I have a disagreement. I think people want to know how they can solve the price of groceries and housing and transportation. I think that, remember, when Trump left office, the cost of living was lower.
Correct.
Now, COVID changed all that. There are no simple solutions to that. Let's just talk about groceries. We've got to take on the price gouging. Is Trump going to do that? No, of course not. Housing. We have gigantic Wall Street companies buying up all this housing stock, raising rents, raising the price of housing. Who's going to take that on, Donald Trump or Kamala Harris? I think you have to ask people how things are going to change, because they're not going to change by rhetoric, but by action. And I think Harris has put out a definitive plan just on home ownership. It's a huge issue. That's part of the American dream. Trump has nothing on that. How are we going to deal with the price of groceries? It is certainly not saying, okay, big conglomerates, do whatever you want. That doesn't work. So we need a fighter, and we need a fighter who actually cares about how the average person lives. I mean, I think about Kamala Harris working at McDonald's. I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken. I just remember how important that check was to my family. You know, Donald Trump, he never had to worry about any of that stuff. Let's not kid ourselves. So I think you've got to break through the rhetoric and ask yourself, who's actually going to fight for what I need?
You brought up the McDonald's stunt, and I'm curious, as a labor leader who is someone who represents service sector workers, what did you think of that display at a closed McDonald's with vetted customers? What did you think of that?
Listen, it makes us cynical about how photo ops happen and how interviews happen. And I would consider that, I'm going to use Donald Trump's, that's just fake news. It was just fake.
Yeah, I called it fake work yesterday. I mean, because he loves fake work. He loves driving a truck or wearing a little funny hat and holding a shovel, but doesn't actually know what an honest day's work is.
He would have no idea what 8 hours at McDonald's are. No idea. He would have no idea about 8 hours on a grill. He would have no idea 8 hours behind a bar. He would have no idea about 8 hours as a housekeeper. So those are the kind of jobs we represent, and those are the type of people who need a government that really works for them.
And not just spending 8 hours doing those jobs, but then going home and having to work another 4 or 6 hours just to put food on the table and make ends meet by the end of the week. And that's clearly, you know, for me, I look at Donald Trump and I go, clearly not the kind of guy I want in the halls of power representing me, because he doesn't know what it is to be in the world in which I live.
No, that's not who he runs from. I don't think they're, I think Mar-a-Lago, whatever that place is called, or the country club up in New Jersey, has a lot of folks hanging out with him, like the type of workers I talked about.
So as you're out there on the doors and you're talking to people, you know, what's the message that resonates the most? And I know you talked about groceries and the costs and all that, and you're going through Kamala Harris's plan. Is that it? Or, because I keep hearing border, I keep hearing, inflation, I keep hearing just, we got to make America great. I keep hearing jingoism. What are you hearing as you're talking to people, camera?
People are dealing with the cost of living. They're worried about their health care. They're worried about providing for their families. They're worried about the American dream. And I think you have to put it in those terms. I mean, one of the Republicans' budget proposal is to start taxing health care. If you have good health care, the idea that you're going to get taxed on good health care is obviously a big, big issue. So I think we got to talk about bread and butter issues. There'll be plenty of other people talking about social issues. I think there's no question at all when we talk about immigration, we've got to talk about, okay, what happens tomorrow if Donald Trump gets what he wants? A lot of families have mixed families. They're both documented and undocumented. If those people who are undocumented all get deported like Trump and his allies want, what happens to your economics? There was a good border bill. Trump got defeated. Remember, there's a very good immigration bill that had passed out of the Senate that the House refused to hear like 10 years ago. The Republicans don't want solutions. They want campaign issues to frankly scare people. This is all about fear. At the same time, I think we've got to talk about bread and butter issues because people care about how they're going to provide for themselves and their families and their loved ones.
Yeah. Let me ask you a last line of questioning. This Project 2025, which the Trump campaign keeps running away from, saying it's not his platform, but it is a lot of the very best people spending a lot of time and putting a lot of effort, and a lot of those people will be in his administration again. What do we make of this?
You don't make a playbook without using it. I'll just as simple as that. And for example, let's talk about a union. They would get rid of car check neutrality, which has allowed unions to grow with companies without having these knockout, drag out several year battles. And think about this. Elon Musk would be involved probably with labor relations. This is a guy who is a zealot anti-union, will fight to the death. Do you want that, or do you want somebody like Julie Hsu, who's a great Secretary of Labor? Look at those comparisons. I'll take Julie Hsu any day of the week.
Yeah, my grandfather always said if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. And I look at the money that Elon Musk is throwing out there. Was here in my neck of the woods in Harrisburg over the weekend, gave out $1 million to sign up for their pledge, and of course give them all your data. The kind of money that he's throwing around, I have to imagine he expects a pretty sizable return on investment. For me, that's the number one reason in my book to vote against Trump, because of those people that he would bring along with him.
Yeah, listen, my mother used to say, always look at the company that you keep and look at his company. People like Elon Musk, people who are billionaires, who want to frankly take America back, not to the 20th century, to the 19th century.
Oh, I'll tell you, we got a lot of work to do between now and Election Day, and I wish you the best out there on the doors. Your union doing an amazing job. Keep it up. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thank you so much. Have a good one. Take care.
Appreciate it. D. Taylor there with Unite here. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you getting people knocking on your door? Are you hearing the kind of messaging that D's talking about? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1981. The United States Federal Labor Relations Authority voted to decertify the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, or PATCO. The PATCO union had gone on strike earlier that year over wages, hours, and working conditions. President Ronald Reagan demanded the workers return to work or be fired. When the union decided to stay out, he fired more than 11,000 workers. federal law prohibited federal workers from participating in a strike. Yet until Reagan, the law was not strictly enforced. The three-person Federal Labor Relations Authority sided with Ronald Reagan. Originally, their decision was 2-1 against the union. But less than 2 weeks later, the last member changed his vote in support of decertification. The union attempted to fight the decertification with a court appeal. Their efforts failed. In one of labor's great ironies, Patco had actually endorsed Ronald Reagan for president. Leading up to the 1980 presidential election, Ronald Reagan had written a letter to the president of the union. In the letter, he promised, "You can rest assured that if I'm elected president, I will take whatever steps are necessary to provide our air traffic controllers with the most modern equipment available and to adjust staff levels and work days so that they are commensurate with achieving a maximum degree of public safety." He also pledged a spirit of cooperation between the president and the air traffic controllers. Within a year, the union had been decertified. What happened at Patco sent a chill through the labor movement of the United States. Since then, other Republican politicians, like Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, have sought to undermine public sector unions. In doing so, they often invoke the memory of Ronald Reagan and Patco. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I got to tell you, I listened to Detailer there, talking about what he's experiencing on the doors, and it's what I've heard in a lot of places. Look, you know, the reality is everyone's concerned about how they're going to put food on the table. Everyone's concerned about prices that have gone up. Everyone's concerned about wages that don't go far enough, and I find it interesting the moment that we're in. Because if you're interested, if that's your focus, if inflation is your thing, you know, what are they going to do? What each side's going to do to help? I think it was important what he said. You know, we had the pandemic that threw all of that stuff into chaos. That's why we're here. You had a major once-in-a-lifetime event. Once-in-a-couple-of-lifetime events. And what it did is it threw everything into chaos. We had exposed the fact that we are not an independent, self-reliant country. The fact that our supply chain is so dependent on China and the rest of the world that in these moments, we have trouble. We couldn't get what we need. And for Americans, that's really hard to admit, that we don't have the capacity to get whatever we need whenever we need it. And you know, look, I understand it. I understand the frustration. I understand the anger. I get it. But there was only one guy in this campaign, one administration, that actually did something about it. The Biden administration moved on reshoring manufacturing, moved on investing in our infrastructure, and Kamala Harris will continue that. Trump did a lot of talking about it. And this is the thing that gets me time and time again. It's a lot of talk, not much on the policy. The tipped minimum wage, for instance. Fine, I'm not against not taxing tipped wages. I don't think we do it now anyway, because most people who earn tips don't make enough to pay the federal minimum wage. Now, they're not talking about state taxes or anything like that. It's just the federal portion. But I think you know, people hear what they want to hear. Now, what's interesting to me is on the inflation front, I've been saying from the beginning that I want a commission, let's say, you know, like the Truman Commission of age past, the one that I remember the most, go taking out war profiteering. I said from the very beginning, we need a commission to go be looking into these massive price increases. How does Bob Casey put it? Greedflation and shrinkflation. The fact that we're paying more for what we used to get and we're paying the same for less. That's the free market working itself out, gouging us when they can. And I said, outside of that, I'm going to wait to see when the system eats itself, when the people who are gouging us realize that they've been gouged themselves, and that they realize that they've been gouging each other while gouging us. and then do something about it. And I find it interesting that it was a week ago Friday when McDonald's filed a lawsuit. And this is rich. It really you got to give McDonald's credit, but they filed a lawsuit and they're suing four of the world's largest meat producers. That would be Cargill, JBS, National Beef Packing, and Tyson. And why are they suing, you may ask? Well, they're suing for allegedly conspiring to raise prices. They're talking about collusion. They're talking about these four big companies price fixing and ultimately raising their prices while they were raising our prices. And again, what they're trying to do on a couple of fronts. One, money. They most certainly want to line their pockets. But two, they want to be able to go say, well, we didn't raise our prices because we wanted to. Oh, we had to. Now, this lawsuit filed in a New York federal court alleges that these four producers violated the U.S. antitrust law by coordinating lower prices for slaughter-ready cattle and slowing plant production. And their argument is by doing this, they artificially raised the prices for everybody. And now McDonald's is in a kind of an interesting and special position because they are the largest buyer of beef and pork in the world. Let that sink in for a minute. They are the largest buyer of beef and pork in the world. So when that organization, when that special buyer is going, hey, we got cheated with the kind of power, buying power that they have, imagine what happens to you and me. Imagine when we go to the grocery store and you see the steak now that was $8 a pound is now 20. That's this. This is good old-fashioned opportunism. It's like I've been saying about the gas prices. You know, there are plenty of opportunities for the oil companies to go out there and increase production right here. Biden has given more leases than anyone. The oil companies are holding on to more leases than they've ever had. They're just choosing not to drill because they know you don't have a choice. You have to buy gas to get to work. You have to have gas in your tank to go to the store to pay the inflated prices. You have to have gas in the tank to get your kid to soccer practice. You're going to complain about it, but you're going to pay it. Because that's what we as Americans do. And there's no alternative. It's not like you can get on the bus and ride the bus. It's not like electric vehicles are readily available to everyone because we've got half of the population with their heads, well, dark side of the moon. You want to talk about competition? Give me something that really competes. And this is where I start looking at this McDonald's suit, and I'm kind of expecting that maybe we're going to see more. Maybe we'll see other organizations going, hey, wait a minute. If McDonald's did it, now we don't know how much McDonald's is suing for. It's an undisclosed, the article said an undisclosed amount. I don't know what that means. I can only think it's a lot. It's an awful lot. But here we are. You've got these big four companies that control about 80% of U.S. beef production in this country. And you've got McDonald's, the largest buyer of beef in the world, now going to go head-to-head with resources in a federal court. Should be interesting. Now, do I expect there to be some kind of quiet, backroom, non-disclosure kind of settlement? Yeah, I think so. Where both parties claim harmless? I kind of do. But in this moment, sitting here where I'm at, going, this is a sign that even the people who have been gouging us are going, hey, maybe we're getting gouged. For instance, JBS USA got sued by producers, and they settled for something like, I think it was like $52 million. Again, we have no idea what that was about. We have no idea, you know, was there any blame or was it just, oh, well, you know, happens. We just, you know, just to save the lawsuit money, we paid it. This will be interesting to see what comes out of this McDonald's suit. But I want to hear your thoughts. Is this the issue for this election for you? Is it all about inflation, which I get, or is it about something else? I want to hear. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.